Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to Monday. It's Hail Varsity Radio. I'm ESPN Lincoln. I'm Colton Stone. Schmidt still out. We'll probably be back tomorrow, maybe whether he likes it or not. 466-3776 is where you can call. Or find us, as always, on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, and at Two Birds, One Stone for me, at Schmidt underscore radio for Chris. And before we bring on the multi-talented Brandon Vogel, find him on Twitter, at Brandon L. Vogel, Hail Varsity's managing editor. Statement from the Nebraska Athletic Department earlier this afternoon in regards to Maurice Washington. The statement from them reads as follows. Last fall, we were contacted by the Nebraska Attorney General's Office and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Police Department and made aware that officials in California were interested in interviewing Maurice Washington about a prior incident. Details were not shared, and there was no additional follow-up with the Nebraska Athletic Department. Recently, we were made aware of the charges that have been filed against Maurice in California. We have not had a chance to review the charges and will continue to monitor this ongoing legal process. So, Brandon, not exactly a quiet day in Nebraska athletics today, as we'll get into multiple things that have happened. But first off, how are you, and what do you make of this situation so far?
Yeah, doing pretty well. It was not the typical Monday, I think, in the Husker news universe by any means. You know, as far as the Washington thing goes, you know, still a lot more questions at this point, I think, than answers. The allegations here are certainly serious, and you know, it's there's still a lot to kind of be sorted out there, but I think no matter which way these things go, you're kind of facing one of the first really big decisions of the Scott Frost era at Nebraska, because what do you do here? Yeah. Everyone has sort of their own opinion on that, but we'll see. It does feel like one of those things that needs to play out a little bit, but based on the statement we've gotten, I think there's still a lot of questions out there.
Yeah, you see, no, I wouldn't say this exact thing happened at many universities, but you see big things happen, especially involving athletic departments. And it's kind of about towing that moral line. And like you said, it's a big decision. Is there one way or the other that they should lean with this? Or is this more of a let's get all the details and then make an educated decision from then?
Yeah, I think you, no matter what the situation, you know, you legitimately have to make an effort to be as informed as you can be in terms of there being a right decision here. I don't know if that situation presents itself really that often, and that's why, you know, coaches have to make a lot of difficult decisions like this. I mean, if we're to assume what's out there happened, and Maurice Washington is eventually convicted of something that's out there, you know, at some point then you have that discussion that coaches of any sports seem to have often enough of, where you're talking about, well, at what point do you start or stop trying to do what's best for the individual involved and start trying to do what's best for the program or the team or the university? And those are tricky things. There's no black and white with that. There's a lot of gray area there. And at this point, you know, I don't even know if we've inched into the gray area. It all kind of dropped today, and everyone's trying to scramble and figure out exactly where Nebraska's at in its process and what exactly happened.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Brandon, some more news within, I mean, the football program mostly, but the two big pieces of news with the assistants. The assistants, they open up as far as valuation goes, that they get paid more. And at the same time, you then find out the D-line coach for Nebraska, Mike Dawson, is heading to the New York Giants. What's your initial take on him leaving? It's kind of weird, I think, that Dawson is the first one to go, based on, I don't want to say the star-studded coaching staff that they have here at Nebraska, but with how many names were floated around when they left UCF of who may come with, who may not come with. Is it weird that Dawson is first and that it's to the NFL?
I would have said yes. I think I'm in the same boat as you there. A couple of things make this a little bit unique, and I think that's one. Dawson is kind of an East Coast guy. You know, he grew up in Massachusetts, played college football there, spent a lot of time on the East Coast, both at, you know, well, at Maine, New Hampshire. He was with the Eagles when Chip Kelly was there, and then when New York hires Chip Kelly's former offensive coordinator with the Eagles, just about a week ago, I think that kind of presented itself as a new opportunity for Dawson. So if his family's mostly out there and he's been in the NFL before, you put those together and it sort of starts to add up a little bit. But yeah, in the overall Nebraska coaches pool of who's going to be the first to leave, I would not have put my money on Dawson.
If you would have put your money on someone, who do you think it would have been? Because earlier I was thinking about this. The biggest name that was attached, I feel like, to leaving was Troy Walters. Not that, you know, there's any speculation that he's going to leave. Maybe it's more of a, hey, let's take this thing down the road a couple years, and then maybe something better will open up. But I think that's where my money would have been, was on Walters.
Yeah, I think so, too. Certainly at the start of the year, you know, he sort of has the, I don't know if he has the highest profile, but a little bit like we saw with Sean McVay and the Rams. You know, he kind of has the, oh, well, he came up, you know, he coached offensive football under Frost, which certainly still has some appeal. Now I start to wonder, as we got a little bit deeper into the season, if Greg Austin wouldn't be my pick there. Mm-hmm. Heard his name mentioned with the Texas State job, which, you know, may have just been rumor, but the fact that he's getting mentioned for that at all, I think kind of indicates where he's at. And I think he's going to become, as we go forward, and Nebraska presumably starts to win a little bit more, I think he's going to become one of those popular names you hear every December.
Is losing the DL coach now a big deal? Or, I mean, it feels like maybe it's better that it happens now than, you know, maybe closer to the season. That way you can get someone in and get the system implemented. But is it – I guess it's still kind of a developing situation as well, but is it that big of a deal, or are we kind of maybe blowing it out of proportion a little bit?
I think it'll be okay for Nebraska. You know, Mike Dawson was a good coach, well-liked by the players, and you know, did some good things on the recruiting trail, so it's always tough to lose a veteran coach. But I think this will give Frost kind of an opportunity to really add to his staff since the first time he became a head coach. You know, mm-hmm. those guys were with him all 2 years at UCF, and then all came with him as well. And I'm sure that he has some guys on his short list. I don't know who they are at this point, of kind of young and promising upcoming coaches. And I expect Nebraska to probably go that route. There are some former Nebraska defensive linemen that kind of immediately come to mind. And you saw a lot of them mentioned on Twitter this afternoon when news of the Dawson thing broke. But I kind of, you know, Scott Frost is well-versed in these football circles, so I don't think he'll – I think he'll have a lot of interest in the job, and I think he'll have a lot of candidates that were kind of on his short list, because you've always got to have one as head coach.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hill Varsity Radio. Brandon, a little more news with football. They pick up a punter that's transferring from Michigan State, if I remember correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but – punter from Michigan State is transferring in, and we've seen, you know, the recruiting trail ends. Not that recruiting ever ends, but they're going to start looking at the transfer market and maybe filling just a couple of gaps that they need. Is there a big need at punter? I know we saw that it was kind of between Lightbourne and then it was Armstrong, and not that neither of them are capable of punting, but is this a unique pickup, or is there a very specific spot for this?
Well, I think it just kind of gives them options. You know, mm-hmm. punter is one of those positions where I think both staffs are comfortable spending a scholarship, certainly. And then if you can add some walk-on options, well, then you increase your pool of potential candidates. And, you know, Nebraska made a punter switch midway through the year last year. They have those guys back, but adding somebody else there kind of just increases the competition in the room. And it's probably better for the team as a whole, I think, anytime you can do that, particularly if you can do it as a walk-on, which, you know, we're still trying to determine if he's coming in as a scholarship player, if he's coming in as a walk-on. Mm. He was a walk-on at Michigan State. So Nebraska's a little bit fortunate in that through the strength of their walk-on program, and particularly their history with specialists, be it punter or kicker, I think they're always going to have some of those options. And that's kind of a probably undervalued advantage for Nebraska, I think. You know, if most teams out there have the luxury of spending a scholarship on one punter, Nebraska might always be carrying two or three.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the question then lays on, you know, we've been seeing a lot of guys that are transferring without good reason. They've been transferring and becoming immediately eligible. It seems now that it's a little easier to throw out a reason of, you know, why you transferred. Maybe you're buried in the depth chart. Maybe your position coach leaves. Is it considerably easier, or is it equally difficult on a case-by-case basis to be granted immediate eligibility?
It seems easier on the whole. What makes this one a little bit interesting is that, you know, he's not Justin Fields, where
right.
he's a starting quarterback. And one of the best ones in the country from a couple of years ago happens to be wanting to go there. You know, a punter is a little bit different. That's not to diminish punting in any regard. It's right. just sort of the facts of the matter. So I would be surprised if that were the case here, or if Nebraska even pushed for it, really. But it does seem like we're in an era where the NCAA, unless there are overwhelming reasons not to, is going to side with the player more often than not.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hill Varsity Radio. Brandon, about three and a half minutes here. Early thoughts on the AAF. Saturday's opening night drew a better rating than the middle of the season NBA games. The argument has been that any league debut may be better than, you know, game 39 of the NBA, just because who knows if it's important or not at this point in the season. But early takeaways from the AAF.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how much of that they can carry over into their second weekend. But really, when I watched part of, I think, all four games over the weekend. And I was impressed with the level of football. Not that I was surprised. I mean, these are very good players, you know, who just haven't quite found a home in the NFL for whatever reason. So that part of it was good. And also, you know, there's nothing wacky about it. Like, the XFL was fun and great and awesome for all of the reasons it was the XFL. Mm-hmm. But it felt a little bit like a novelty. And this is just football. You know, there's no extra points. Okay, that's kind of different but interesting. There's no kickoffs, which definitely seems like where the game's kind of heading. So I think the changes that they made to the game itself were pretty smart. There's a lot of, you know, particularly for a college market like Nebraska, there's a lot of guys out there that people recognize that weren't guys that flamed out in the NFL. They were just kind of fringe guys that, mm-hmm. that didn't get a chance, and here they are trying to make it. I thought it was interesting, you know, in the whole sort of lead up to the games, their pre-recorded, here's our big rollout. They really hammered that point home. Like, these are guys looking for another chance, and it's easy to get behind that. Like, I think it'll do pretty well. It'll come down from its opening weekend rankings, but I don't think anybody's going away soon.
About a minute and a half, Brandon. Do you appreciate, like you said, the XFL is more of a novelty, and we don't, you know, now that that's still a year out and we've seen this, you know, who knows, maybe people want more football, maybe this is the threshold, but do you appreciate that it's just football with slightly different rules? I mean, I think the rule changes are good. In fact, I mean, it sped up the game. There's no TV breaks. It's fast. It's just like you're just watching football exactly for what it is. Is that what you appreciate about it?
Yeah, that's really the heart of it. I think you put that really well. Like, these leagues in the past, you know, we've seen them try to be like, well, we've taken football and we've made it better. We've really focused on all the parts you love of it and turned them up to 11. Like, now, people just really love football, so just give them football. And you know, that seems easy enough, but I think it's a real credit to this league that that's what they're trying to do. Well, kind of, you know, I think their long-term goal is to serve as sort of a feeder system into the NFL, for which there's no real option for those guys right now. I mean, you go from college to the NFL, and if you stick on a roster, great. And if you don't, you kind of kick around practice squads and don't play a ton of football, but practice a lot. So I do think there's a niche here for a league like this, and I hope it keeps going, because I'm definitely not going to turn down more football in February. And it seems like a lot of people are in that boat.
That's Brandon L. Vogel, at Brandon L. Vogel. Brandon Vogel, Hill Varsity Managing Editor. Brandon, thanks for joining us. And yeah, I look forward to more football. We'll talk to you later this week.
All right, thanks a lot.
Coming up, we'll break down a little bit of sports betting with our man, Danny Burke.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio listen?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Keep it rolling here on a Monday at Hail Varsity Radio. Schmidt hopefully feeling better, at least at some point of the day. Joining me now, getting the band back together. Find him on Twitter, at Danny Burke. 5, if I'm still correct. I hope you haven't changed by now. The Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back, and you nailed the Twitter name, so good for you on that. Still remembered. But, yeah, it's good to get the tandem back together on Hill Varsity while Schmidt is, of course, bailing and leaving you out to dry once again.
He said he'll probably be back tomorrow whether he likes it or not, so I guess that's better than nothing at this point. But
there you go.
Fingers crossed right now. But I wanted to start here. You're probably more well-informed than I am about this, but something we've been seeing happen a lot, at least in the past week or two, in college basketball, is these shots that are getting chucked up at the end of the game, or a guy drives to the lane and gets an easy bucket, and it just absolutely shatters the spread of the game right there at the end. And there's no review for the buzzer beater because it doesn't change the outcome of the game. But now they're thinking about implementing that for March Madness because – everyone bets on March Madness. So, I mean, what are your early takeaways from them at least looking into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the right thing to do. I was watching some of those highlights and seeing everyone freak out on Twitter about it. I know it happened. Was it in 2 Iowa State games or just 1 Iowa State game? Do you know?
One for sure, and then a Creighton game, but there might have been another. Who knows at this point? I feel like it happens more often than it doesn't at this point, but...
Exactly, and yeah, luckily I was not on either end of those and stressing those bets out, so I'm grateful for that. But then I saw people getting into it and found out, you know, one of the head refs was the same for both games, so that seemed a little fishy. Not that, you know, anything's probably really coming down to that, but I think it's a good thing to do. I mean, it would kind of suck if you're on the other side where it would benefit you, of course, but it's the right thing to do. You got to review it, especially in March Madness. It'll save a lot of heartbreak, a lot of discussion, and just a lot of suspicion like we've been seeing because that one ref has been on both games. But, yeah, like I said, I've just been grateful I haven't been on the wrong side of that. But my heart breaks for the people who have been. So it's a good thing they're implementing that, especially at that time of the year.
Have you ever been – I mean, I'm sure everyone has their bad beats, but have you ever been on, you know, the edge of your seat for a game like that and you're sweating it out? I'm sure you have. But recently or in college basketball, has it ever come back to bite you?
In college basketball, I'm not sure. I'm sure I have, but some of my worst beats were in football. I just remember a lot of them were – oh, one of them that was really bad was the Ohio State-Washington bowl game, right? So the spread went down to 5, and a lot of people got screwed on this. It was that 2-point conversion at the end of the game. The Ohio State guy picks it off, runs it back, and he would have covered if he scores because you get the 2 points, and then he gets tripped up by his own teammate. I remember I was just going nuts over that, and so were so many people on Twitter. And then I've been on the bad end and the good end of a couple hockey games where I had the over in it, and it was just an empty netter, and some guy just completely botched it and missed it. So I got heartbroken on that. But then, of course, I've been on the other end, too, with about 10 seconds. The guy's a breakaway, puts it in, just to nail the over in time. But there's been too many heartbreaks to recall, you know, to separate one from the other. I mean, that's just how it goes, and that's what keeps the adrenaline going.
Yeah, Danny Burke with us here on Hill Varsity Radio. And, I mean, is it more of a – it seems like it's more of an issue in basketball right now with spreads rather than over-under because, I mean, right. Look at the NBA a lot, too. Now you're seeing over-unders being set at, like, 225, and they're just obliterating it. So I don't know why anyone would take the under. But is this more of an issue with spreads rather than anything else just because of how close basketball can be?
Yeah, I think it comes down more to than the spreads and the over-under. I mean, a lot of the times you'll see the over-under get right in that range of where they set it, and you just look and like, wow, how is Vegas always right on this? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you could kind of live with that more so than some guy getting a lucky shot or something after the buzzer if the spread is right there. That just always seems to be a little bit more heartbreaking to me. So, yeah, college basketball, I mean, that's just killer. So I've been staying away a little bit ever since Nebraska's been on a slump. They've kind of been breaking my heart themselves, so that's been tough for me to go back and watch some college basketball. I'm still just in a little bit of depression. But, yeah, no, it's never fun to be a part of the wrong side of that. And Colton, I do have to ask you, though, while we're on the topic of college basketball, because I don't think you've updated it recently, but I saw the whole debacle with you having to streak on O Street because of Rutgers.
Yeah.
Has there been any update in that situation?
Well, if Mother Nature decides to stop making it a frozen tundra outside or activate the second ice age, we'll get it figured out. But, yeah.
That just makes it even better, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I was on the – I mean, that's a bad beat. That doesn't – you know, Vegas had no control over that one, that's for sure.
Yeah, now, that's your own bad beat.
You right know what there. The worst part's going to be is that Rutgers right now is at 4 wins, and they may not get more than 4, but that was where I set the number at. So, no, there's no updates on it yet. We're in the process of figuring it out, but yeah, that I'm on my own end of a bad real life beat. I mean, no money was involved, but dignity's involved, and I don't that might be worse.
Even worse.
Yeah. So
yeah.
you alluded to a little bit some heartbreak with Nebraska basketball, and you're right. It's been hard to watch. You know, you almost have to tape your eyes open just to really feel the pain. But I mean, what if you had to give me a percentage? What percentage chance do they have to make a run at the end of the season to get into any kind of a tournament? Frankly, I know that they may get invited to the CBI if they miss everything, but who knows if they accept it? Is there a glimmer of hope that they make it to March Madness?
At this point, Colton, I just really don't see it at all. I mean, they don't have an easy end-of-the-year schedule by any means. They're going to be hosting Purdue, who's been on a hot streak lately, with Edwards arguably the best player in the Big Ten. Then they're going to Michigan and to Michigan State, and then they got to play Iowa at home, which it's a rivalry game to some certain extent. So that's always a toss-up. I just don't see it happening. I mean, we have to hope Nebraska at least gets one win here down the stretch. They're favored against Minnesota at least. On ESPN right now, I don't know what the spread is, but they're predicted to win just because of that home court advantage. But I it's one of those things where realistically, I don't think they have a shot to make the tournament. But I also, even if I did, I don't know if I'd want to get my hopes up, because just like every other Nebraska fan, you get your hopes up, the expectations are set high, and then you get your heart broken, just like in sports gambling and just like being a Nebraska fan.
Well, you mentioned that they're favored against Minnesota. It seems like they've been favored in a lot of games down this stretch, down a losing stretch. Now, I'm not out there, you know, setting the numbers or anything. Obviously, that's on Vegas, and is it? I guess you can look at their KenPom and you can look at all these different ranking systems of where they should be or where they stack up. But I mean, where is Vegas coming from a lot of these times with Nebraska being favored, because you see them favored by, let's say, 6, and then they lose by 12. So I don't know where they're coming from at this.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those immediate effect kind of things. I mean, Vegas trying to keep up with it. Nebraska going – before Copeland's injury and before they lost Michigan State, they maybe only lost one time at home. I forget what it was straight up, and, you know, they got 20 in a row, and then against the spread, they – have only lost it one time at home. So then Vegas was finally starting to give them respect at home, and they were catching up with that. And then, of course, Copeland goes out, and they're like, okay, Nebraska's still playing at home. PBA has places to play in the country. We'll still give them respect, see how they can handle Copeland going out. And, of course, Nebraska hasn't been able to handle it, and they still were giving them respect against Illinois because it's Illinois, although they've been playing tough against every opponent virtually this year. So now they're starting to catch on. You could see, I think they were a double-digit underdog against Purdue, didn't cover in that game. And then they'll be hosting Minnesota, and I'm sure they'll be favored by a couple points, maybe two or three. I would guess Nebraska would be favored by, but I still don't know if I'd have any confidence in betting them. They seem not to be able to get it done at home or away, obviously.
Before we move on from Husker basketball, Danny, just how many wins do you think it would take? Now, like you said, this is a tough stretch. They've got Michigan, they've got Michigan State, they've got Purdue again, they've got Iowa, they've got Minnesota. I mean, you have to get, if you include the Big Ten tournament, you have to get at least five more wins. You have to be at 500 or better if you even want to sniff at it. I mean, what? How many of these do you realistically think they have to win? And maybe not convincingly because they're better teams, but how many do they have to win to make it a run?
I mean, honestly, so they're at 13 right now, and if you count the Big Ten tournament, I'd say they'd still have to get to 20. I know that didn't do it last year, but taking into the factor without having Copeland in there, I think that would help in just showing that this team could bounce back and deal with this adversity. Now, I also think they'd have to get some upsets. They'd have to be 12th-ranked Purdue at home, or either get one on the road against Michigan or Michigan State. They're going to have to beat a ranked team, whether it be in the season or in the Big Ten tournament. That's the only way I would envision it happening. But, I mean, even when they had the full roster and they were still feeling it and still killing teams at home, they still couldn't play well on the road. So I don't think it's going to get any better without Copeland, especially in the Big Ten tournament. We saw it last year getting blown out by Michigan in the first round. Granted, they did make it to the national championship, but in big games like that and on the road, Nebraska just has choked and not lived up to the moment, and I don't see it getting any better with all this bad mojo just heading their way with injuries, with 10 miles, with just the vibe around the stadium and the state.
About 90 seconds, Danny. Early thoughts on the AAF. I caught the first game. I tried to watch as much of it as I could. Talked to Brandon about this a little bit. It just felt like football. It didn't feel like there was a gimmick to it. It didn't feel like, you know, we're putting the over-under on, 6.5 helmets lost, how many broken backs. Like, it just felt like pure football. Did you get a chance to watch any, or what are your thoughts on it?
I did get a chance to see some highlights, and I'm a fan of it. Any football that, you can gamble on, let's be honest, I'll take, and just football in general. It was fun to see, and it's fun to see a lot of those Nebraska guys get out there. You know, maybe you have a little bit of ill will feeling toward Mike Riley, so you could be on whatever side if you want him to win or lose. But, no, I'm definitely a fan of it. It's nice to kind of get over that little hangover of the Super Bowl and realize football's over to get this other league. But, yeah, it was cool to see Spurrier get a little bit of that Philly special action too. So, I don't know who I'm going to root for yet. I may be leaning for the Apollos because of Spurrier, but that's a runner. Who do you like here, Colton?
I'm going to stick with the color scheme and where they're playing out of, and I'm going to take the Arizona Hotshots. I followed them on Twitter as soon as I could. They're playing out of Sun Devil Stadium. So, I think that's where I'm rolling with.
We're going to get you a T-shirt.
Yeah, with Starter being the sponsor, they've got some cool jackets. Now, I don't think I'm going to spend the $135 on it because I'm sure I can find something better to do with that money. Maybe bet on the Hot Shots. I think that's in order. Everyone needs to pick a team and get a shirt.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
All right. Danny, you keep it real. We'll see if we'll keep in contact with you if we need any help down the stretch with Husker basketball. I appreciate it.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome in, Gary Sharp. Gary, this is a really depressing time of year. I'm just wondering if Brandon couldn't do it. You've been around basketball a long time. Percentage chance that Nebraska digs deep, turns this around, salvages the season. Percent chance.
Single figures.
I mean, I'm wondering at a number.
I think, it's if you're Wednesday night, you go into that game and you're thinking, okay, there's there's a little bit of hope here. There's nine games. This is what the roadmap could look like. But you got to win tonight. And there was nothing in that game that said there's still hope. And you saw how emotional the head coach is and his players are after the game. And whether it's just they're in a rut, can't get out of it. I just don't know how they score the basketball. What they have entered into offensively is a black hole that's going to take more than a big shot hitting to get them out of. And it is downright depressing. And it's, you know, you go from the stages of being angry to sad to thinking, all right, what happened? How do you fix this? And right now Nebraska's at a stage where you have eight games left and it might even get worse. But you have to look at the big picture now and figure out how you grow this program and who the growers are going to be, either coaching them or playing. Because some guys that, you know, will be back here next year, this is their time to shine. And they got eight games to go. Guys that are seniors that expect to go to the NCAA tournament, never say never. They can save their season, but it's just the offense and the inability to shoot the basketball, and it's going the wrong way, and it's been going the wrong way for a while, is just startling. I don't think I've ever seen something like this.
Gary Sharp with us on Hill Varsity Radio. And Gary, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's more about, I mean, getting these young guys into play, and it's hard to hear that, you know, Miles may not be back, and you look at the recruiting class they're coming in, and you kind of want to give him maybe a chance to work with it. But then you look at the past 6 years up to now, and you've seen some of the guys that he has recruited or transferred in, and the development really hasn't been there, and it's almost like they're regressing. Is that kind of what you've noticed too?
Well, I think a big key here is Glenn Watson. And Colton, that would be the person you're talking about. You know, Glenn looks a little bit like what he looked like last year, where he got off to a good start, and then he really struggled to shoot the basketball, and it looked like he lost trust in his teammate. The difference last year compared to this year, and I see almost the same thing with Glenn, he got off to a great start this year through the month of December, and we're like, he's a different player. He's got a lot more confidence. His shot is going down. He's being a facilitator. The thing with Glenn is, last year, when he would get into these slumps, Evan Taylor would be able to come off the bench and fill a role. Evan Taylor was so important to that team last year because he was able to give Glenn a breather, let Glenn sit on the bench, just take a deep breath, watch what was unfolding, and then get back out there. And Evan Taylor would come on the floor, and he's not going to put up a double, you know, every time he was on the floor, but he was good in that role to spell some minutes, but also he was really good off the floor and kind of bringing everybody together. And there's elements of what Evan Taylor did last year, what Kenya Hunter did, that Nebraska is missing. But no excuses. This is all on Nebraska. They're not playing well. They're not scoring. Their confidence is shredded. And when the head coach looks like somebody who has taken, you know, 12 rounds of punches against a heavyweight champion, man, it's tough to recover. And I keep saying, you have eight games to go, and it's not like the schedule is easy. The schedule, you still play the big boys in the Big Ten. So pride kicks in. Something has to happen. I just don't see it tonight because of the team you're playing, who right now might be the best team in the Big Ten, and also you're playing in one of the most difficult atmospheres in all of college basketball. And, oh, by the way, they haven't played this week. So they've been sitting there waiting for you for a week.
Isaiah Roby, that said, Gary, he put up 22 shots. I mean, only seven went in, but what's been the thing with Roby? Get more aggressive. God, this guy's got NBA talent. Why doesn't he be more aggressive? Why doesn't he shoot more? He did. Now, for frame of reference, he has 188 field goal attempts on the year. So he took 1/9 of his shots came last Saturday. It was a loss, or not last Saturday, but earlier in the week. It was a loss, but is that maybe something, like, if there's any glimmer of hope? Is it maybe Roby just kind of going for broke and letting it rip like everybody's hoped he would?
I think at that point, you're right, Mark. You let him do it. And he was the spark at the beginning of the game. The problem is, if you go back to Illinois, Roby and Palmer got off to good starts. They just couldn't sustain it, and nobody could, the rest of the roster, couldn't come up to meet him. And, you know, do you go with that same philosophy? I think Isaiah is at a point now where he's looking around, and there's no Isaac Copeland. There's less punch off the bench. There's less punch on the floor. I got to do everything. And if that's the way Nebraska has to win a basketball game, I'm all for it. But he seems to get off to good starts, and then he hits a wall and waits to hand off the baton. And there's been nobody there to take the baton. But if that's the case, I'm for it right now for Isaiah Roby just to go off like he did in the first 15 minutes on Wednesday night. They just have to have James Plummer Jr. and Glenn Watson to be able to match him or get into a groove when Roby is all of a sudden team start adjusting him.
Gary, before we move on to football, I just want to get your thoughts on.
Thank you.
just want to get your thoughts on Omaha basketball. Incredible win the other night, 107 to 102 in overtime, and second in the Summit behind Mike Dom and the Jackrabbits. What have you seen from Omaha this season? And would you believe that they're the best team in the state of Nebraska right now?
And is Darren Hansen going to replace Tim Miles?
No. Oh. They're a fun team to watch. They've always been offensive-oriented, and they've always been one of the top-scoring teams in the country. It's been their defense that has always been an issue. But they're a team that has five different guys that are in double figures. They have a lot of different options. As you mentioned, they won a game on Thursday night in Sioux Falls against South Dakota, which they blew an 18-point lead. We're down six with 3 minutes to go and tied the game at the end of regulation and scored 20 points in 5 minutes and won in overtime by five, where they spent the majority of the night at the free throw line. Are they the best team in Nebraska? It's pretty close. It's pretty close with their starting five. They have probably the best opportunity to get to the NCAA tournament, but they're in a conference that's a one-bid league, and South Dakota State is the class of the league, but you only have to beat them once up in Sioux Falls where you're essentially playing a road game. But this upcoming Thursday, Omaha and South Dakota State play for the second time this year in Omaha. And earlier, only in just a couple weeks ago, Omaha only lost by 10 up at Brookings. But Mike Dom is a handful. He's definitely one of the top scorers of all time in college basketball. He's going to get his 30 and 15 every night and have to figure out how to stop everybody else on the floor.
We'll have more from Gary Sharp, our rewind with him from Saturday. We'll get more into football with him. Just wanted to get his take on basketball and how UNO basketball has been looking as they've had a fairly successful season so far. But coming up to wrap up this hour, a little bit more of our best of February so far of Hail Varsity. Krainak and I will talk about the ever-expanding roster that is Nebraska football. Stay tuned. Hail Varsity Radio continues, Nebraska, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
I wonder if any of the, we counted them. All right, there's been a ton of talk ever since Scott Frost got here. I want to build these roster numbers. I want to increase the walk-on program. Remember that even got a little bit of scorn when Dave Remington was here pre-Scott Frost when he was like, we got to get the walk-on program going. And people were like, oh, God. No, we don't. We need scholarship fast guys.
Like, five stars.
You need that, but you also need the walk-ons.
Yeah.
Because of roster numbers. Because you want to breed this competition in practice. You want to have multiple stations going. You want the three-star, four-star, five-star guy from out of state to see some dude from central or western or northern Nebraska that's just going balls out, play after play after play, setting the tone. And then before you know it, you got a whole team full of guys that are just busting their ass, and you're kind of outperforming your recruiting ranks, which ended up by anywhere between 16 and 19 after this last class, which is pretty good. So Nebraska now, this is unofficial, but I'm pretty sure they have the largest roster in America. In the sport of football, period. Probably.
It's got to be close if it's not.
The sport of football. I think we can reasonably say there is no high school that has 160 dudes on varsity.
No.
They wouldn't even have the room to do it. Maybe somewhere in Texas. I don't know. That's besides the point. But they're not even in the country anymore. They're their own country, right? That's what they want. 160 players. Frost has been on campus for 14 months, just a little over a year. in that time, he's brought in 101. For frame of reference, if you're not familiar, you should be. You get 85 scholarships. That's what you can give out. Mm. Most teams carry anywhere from 100 to 110 players. Some not even that high.
You know? Right, yeah.
Depends on how big your walk-on program is. This dude walks in and in 14 months has brought in 100 players?
Mm-hmm.
This includes walk-ons, of course. 100. Now let's look at how that translates to the roster. 81 of the 106, half of your players, half, are freshmen. There's 48 of those, 48. Or redshirt freshmen, 33. Like, you talk about a youth infusion. I knew this dude was going to flip the roster. Well, not flip the roster. You knew he was going to change things and yeah, add some pieces, but there cannot be another example of this ever anywhere, period. No way. 100 players in 2 years?
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing, is that...
No way.
It obviously does have a lot to do with the walk-on program. That's where the biggest, additions are, probably, because you're also assuming the guys that have left the walk-on program and the guys that have been added and so on and so forth. But yeah, 101 in 14 months, and then also keeping the other 60. I mean, that basically means that after the seniors and the seniors leave, which is what, another 25 kids? That's the next class. So then after two full recruiting cycles, because last year was kind of catch up the whole time, but I mean, they will have the 160 they have on the roster will almost be all new faces, or will all be faces that Frost brought in.
Basically.
Yeah. Within a year or two.
Yeah, it is remarkable what he has done. Will it work? Who knows? That's not what we're saying. Like, we're not saying all's well and, you know, book your tickets to Indy yet.
But it's shocking. I mean, it's a big number.
You're going to lose some guys to attrition. That happens.
Yeah.
But you do not bring in 100 guys in 14 months. It just flat. There's no precedent for that anywhere ever. I'm very confident in saying that.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome back, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio. No Chris Schmidt. Hope he is feeling better. We'll probably be back tomorrow. I'm Colton Stone. Follow me on Twitter at @2birds1stone. As always, follow at Hail Varsity and follow Chris at @Schmidt_radio. It is the frozen tundra outside. It is not pleasant out there. But joining us, hopefully to warm up our spirits, Mondays with Charlie, Blackshirt Charlie McBride. Charlie, It's another bad weather Monday. How are you?
Well, I maybe shouldn't tell you where I am. So, I'm in Arizona. In the 50s. I know it. That's painful. You know, I know what you're going through, because when we left home in Michigan, it was 13 below.
Oh man.
So, but anyway, I think probably that Chris is just, you know, playing hooky.
he just didn't want to get caught in the ice and the snow. He didn't want to lose control on his way here. Oh, I know. Yeah. How's Arizona?
Well, it's great. All my kids are here, and so it's a nice deal, and you know, it's a relaxing in some cases. And then the bad part is when you have so many people that you knew before, you have to go see them. So it's like your days are loaded with that, which is nice. So, I mean, it's fun. It's good to come out once a year. You know, usually we try to get here. This is our first year in February that we've been back here. We didn't go anywhere last year. So it's a great place to be. You know, it's a lot of people, a lot of snowbirds out here.
Yeah, well, if I could, I'd be escaping to Arizona right now. I know that I keep on my weather app Phoenix, and I look at it sometimes just to remind myself where I could be and where I chose to be. Yeah. So, Charlie McBride with us on Hill Varsity Radio. And, Charlie, big news as far as Nebraska goes with the Mike Dawson, the defensive line coach, moving on to the NFL, the first coach of Frost's original staff to leave. What are your thoughts with him heading to the NFL, and is it maybe a surprise that that's the first name that you hear leave?
Well, I think it's probably, it's just what you have inside of you is the easiest way is being a coach. A lot of guys want to go that way because of the recruiting part. I think that's the biggest thing I think I hear guys complain about. I don't have to do recruiting anymore, but you're also doubling up your time. You're probably pretty much maybe a couple of weeks, 3 weeks at the most off. The rest of it, you're preparing for the season, or you're looking at free agents and you're looking at, everything. So, it's a tough job. And if your family can handle it, then it's good, So, but that's just the way it is,
You say you hear that a lot. Is it just because recruiting can be, I don't want to say so taxing, but it's just you have to be out on the road and sell families on what your culture is, basically?
Well, that was the hardest thing, And, of course, when I started, we didn't have cell phones or anything, so you couldn't keep in touch with each other. You didn't have to call players as much. And you did most of your calling during the week at home. A lot of times when you are here, because we had a limit on coaches that could be on the road. I think we were only allowed seven, and so three of them were home most of the time. And once you're out for the whole week. And now they changed that, so they've changed the rules so much that and opened it up, gotten away from all these silly rules that the NCAA had. Their rule book got to be close to 2 inches thick, and it was just a joke. And I think the way they're doing things now, it's harder. I mean, with the social media and so on and so forth, I think recruiting becomes harder. And, kids get a lot of bad information and stuff like that. And I think what you have to do now is you really have to see that the player really trusts what you say. No, I think that's really important. I mean, I had one kid, Eddie Stewart, who was an All-American here at Nebraska for us, and Eddie was telling me about a guy who came and recruited him from Michigan. And when I was talking to him, he said, the shoe salesman was here again. I said, who? The shoe salesman? Who the heck is that? He said, it's a guy from Michigan. And all he says is, you'll fit in here, you'll fit here, you'll fit here. He says, it's crazy. And so that's what the coaches and everybody called the guy when he came around, the shoe salesman's here. So recruiting could be, you have to, some guys just flow at the mouth with a lot of garbage. And some guys just stand up straight and tell you the way it is. And I think that's what Scott's done. I think that makes a big difference. In families, they don't want to hear a bunch of stuff. I remember people trying to trash Nebraska, and I just tell them right away, all you have to do when they start doing that is ask them when they coached at Nebraska, and they'll just shut up right then because what they're saying is you aren't there, you haven't been there, how do you know all this? And tell them that if there's something that does bug you, call me. So it was, and you get a good relationship with a lot of those things. And I think it's not only it's a whole, to me, somebody said, well, you're just recruiting a kid. You're recruiting the whole family. Because there's going to be times when that kid's going to say, Coach, I think I'm going to stay close to home. Mm-hmm. And you respect that. I mean, what are you going to do, choke the kid? No. It's his life. I mean, and so a lot of things, coaches sometimes get really mad at kids for that. That's not the way to go about things. So you have somebody different coming in your house every night. We had a guy come in one time when we were recruiting a guy over in St. Louis, And I was with Tom. We went in, and the father answered the door, and he wanted us to come in this little room and watch the kids' highlight film. And Tom said, well, I've already seen the highlight film. He said, we don't need to see it. You know, if that, you know, we've already seen it. We've already, you know, are willing to offer him a scholarship. And he says, well, what's the deal there? And I said, And he said, well, it's room board, books, tuition, and fees. And he said, that's the full NCAA scholarship. And the guy said, no, really, what's the deal? And right then, the kid wasn't in the room. And Tom got up and walked right into the kitchen, and there's the kid and his mother in there. And he said, I flew down here to see you. Come on in the other room. I want to talk to you. So we, you know, Tom gave his speech, and we left, and as we're walking down the sidewalk, he said, I don't want you to ever talk to that kid again. So that's how that works, you know. And he actually was a third-team running back at Missouri,
mm-hmm.
and he got the ball at the end of the game, and he actually was running a sweep, and we had people coming in his face right now, and he actually threw the ball on the ground and fell down. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. The guy was a complete bust. So, and the dad was looking for, you know, whatever, you know.
Right.
Again, we kind of knew what to expect when we walked in, because the coach from Michigan was coming out of the house. He said, I hope you brought your bag of money. Tom knew what he was. We knew what we were in for then, and that's what it was. And, yeah. And that kid got some stuff, too, so. I don't know.
Charlie McBride with us.
Recruiting's a hard thing.
Oh.
No, it's a hard thing for guys to make a decision to go to pro ball or go to another college or whatever it is.
Charlie McBride with us. Mondays with Charlie on Hail Varsity Radio. And, you know, with that position being the defensive line, something that I know we've touched on with you a little bit, they had pressure on the quarterback early in the season last year, and it kind of faded as the season went. You talk about recruiting. What do they have to do to get better on the defensive line? I know you can say get tougher, get stronger, just hit the weights harder in the gym. But, I mean, it's got to come down to maybe something between the ears. Maybe it's just the development with that defensive line. What is it?
Well, sometimes, you know, we had kids playing, in a position where they could, you know, actually – wider than the tackle in some cases, which they've done. They did a little bit of it last year. I mean, I saw it, and they may end up changing their front a little bit so they get that opportunity to do that. I don't know. But I would guess that they're not getting the pressure that they have to get. I mean, you know, you can't let a guy sit back there. We had guys 195, 210 pounds, you know, that weren't the 6'5", 230, but they were on the split end side, and they learned to play on the tight end side. I mean, but when they were just up against the tackle, that tackle better really be good, because these guys could run. And what they were was, as we went from a 3-4 to a 4-3 and took the outside linebackers and put their hands on the ground. So you had some, you know, if you look back in the years I was there, I think Trev Albers was the first guy. He may still be one or two in sacks. And, you know, at first they're kind of shocked because here's a guy stand up linebacker on the outside has all of a sudden got his hand on the ground. So they make some changes. And, you know, I think there every year there's, different ways of lining up. And you can still run a 3-4 and have a split inside guy pretty much loose. And if you want to, you can widen the tight end side guy in testing situations and, and really get cranking on that, you know, on both the pressure to squeeze him in the pocket. And if you get a good push, he's got problems. And, you have to keep your gap integrity all the time. Mm-hmm. So, but, you kind of prepare against the kind of quarterback you're going to face. But still, it comes down to rushing the passer. So, you know, I don't, you know, I think they got some people there. We took strong safeties a little bit and moved them to outside, you know, outside linebackers or to ends. And, you know, that may happen. Maybe they get a big kid back there at strong safety or safety they're playing at, you know, 210 or something like that and put his hand on the ground and he just smoke, you know, tackle. You know, they cause a big problem there, you know. So it's a tough business, but I would not, to me, if I was in the situation they're in with a rush person, I would just go into the season like we didn't need anybody, you know, and they'll come. I'll promise you, those guys will show up. Next year, they may get two of them, you know, or three. Who knows? But it goes in cycles. And I know we used to try to get tight end, we try to get this and that. And it was always tough for ours because we weren't a throwing football team. But the interesting thing is when you talk to the kids, if you look back in statistics, we probably were last in the league in passing all the time. But we were first in touchdown passes. And so, you know, Tom, it just wait till the secondary is doing, you know, playing the run too much or doing this and that, or, you know, and then bang. And it was, you know, it was all over. And so I remember going out and recruiting when we went to option football, and he says, if you see a quarterback, we want to run first, pass second. So in other words, what he was saying, I want a runner first and a pass, we'll teach him. He said, we'll teach him how to throw the ball good enough, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, everybody has their own philosophy. With a changeup, sometimes Scott's probably along the way, he's met enough people, enough young people and people that he's worked with who he can trust. And so he probably has a list of guys. Most coaches, when they get in the business, sit down flying on an airplane and write down guys' names and positions that, you know, if it comes up, this guy'd like to interview this, you know, and so on and so forth. So that's how it works. It's not just cold turkey. You know, they're and I know Scott's prepared for that kind of thing. And nowadays with the NFL, there's an expansion going on now with the new Alliance League that's coming up. And most of those guys are all kind of halfway retired guys. But, you know, I in fact, went to a game last night where we had, I think, five kids.
Yeah, it was Salt Lake. And,
Yeah. And so I was Tom Banderas. I recruited Tom when he was, and he called when we were out here, and he asked. He said, "You know, we got a couple of tickets. You want to come?" And I did. Good Debbie and I went to the game, and we really enjoyed it. But you got to realize what these guys are. Some of those kids haven't been practicing. I mean, haven't played a game in two and maybe 3 years. They've been on some, you know, scout team type of thing, or a, you know, in the NFL and. Quarterbacks haven't, they've been backup quarterbacks, they haven't played, and so it's, you know, they got all settled down, and then I was impressed with, I really was, with their effort and the things that they did. The receivers were really, I thought, good, and Salt Lake dropped the ball a lot, but we had about four drops on it early in the game, which didn't help. And but anyway, it's you know, I've seen two of their games so far, so I was pretty impressed with both of them for being the first game. And the coaches don't really know the players.
Right.
It's like Scott coming in, you know, and saying, okay, we open up with Michigan. Or we, you know, and you're sitting there, you know, you haven't really studied. You don't know what the other team does.
Right.
I mean, you're playing blind. And so it's going to take a little bit of work on both sides. And I think when I saw last night, the quarterbacks were trying to make a play, and they were just forcing the ball and doing things that they normally probably wouldn't do.
Thanks for joining us, Charlie McBride. You enjoy Arizona, enjoy that warm weather, and stay as far away from the ice and snow as you can.
I will do that, and I'm going to plan on going back to Michigan at least when it gets a little warmer.
Awesome. Sounds good, Coach. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Okay, good. Bye now.
Bye.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Say hi to the Big Ten Network's Jerry DiNardo.
at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, signing day part two got done this week. How you been?
I've been great. You know, I think this has been a huge success, this two signing days. I think the fact that the great majority of the class signed in December, and now everybody else, or all schools that are in a little different situation, had a chance the next month to adjust their class. I think overall it was a big success for the Big Ten.
Big Ten did extremely well, and Coach, I want to focus on Nebraska to start out. And you're a guy who took over three different programs, and you know what it's like to try and sort through old staff, your plans, and oh, by the way, go recruit your future players. What type of impression has Coach Frost made on you? You love recruiting. This is year two of Frost, and they nailed it. I mean, that's the reaction around here locally, that Frost and his staff did a great job. But a guy who's been in it for a long time, what did his 2019 look like to you?
Okay, so I think we start here. They were ranked 19th earlier in the day yesterday. I'm not sure that's where they finished, but going into yesterday, they were going to have the best class that Nebraska's had in 8 years. So that's the numbers. Okay, so the question for me is why. That's the what happened. The why is what I like to deal with. And I think there's a couple of reasons why Scott has gotten off to a great start. Okay, he brings his entire staff with him from UCF. So everyone knows how they recruit, right? I mean, there's a culture to recruiting. When most coaches take over for the first time, if they don't bring the entire staff, someone on that staff has to learn how the head coach wants to recruit. If he only brings half of a staff, or he's a new head coach, he's got to teach 10 guys how to recruit. So I think that's number one why Scott has had success so quickly in 2 years. The other thing is you need to know your niche in recruiting. So my niche at Vanderbilt was different than my niche at LSU. Nebraska's niche is what Coach Osborne did, as Scott observed him as a player and later as a coach. It's a national recruiting base. The new rules have helped Nebraska. So the reason they've had success is because he brought a staff and he knew his niche right away. They hit the ground running. Now, I will say this, Chris. I still maintain, I said this on the network yesterday, I still maintain Nebraska should and will be a top 10 recruiting class, or top 10 recruiting type of programs as we go forward, not a top 20. They're going to jump up in the top 10 while Scott Frost is coaching at Nebraska.
You know, you look at the history and success of the program, and then you look at Frost and you combine that. Is that why you feel Nebraska will be a perennial top 10 team?
Well, yes, but I do think the rules have changed. I think Scott has a tougher job than Coach Osborne. Coach Osborne was in a league most of his career where it was them and Nebraska and the other six. You know, this is a much more competitive environment for anybody coaching at the elite programs like Nebraska. But the facilities come in, the tradition comes in, the fact that they're in the West Division. I mean, I have to tell you, the stars are aligned for Nebraska to take a major step, in my opinion, in their program. And a lot of it has to do with Scott, but there's also a lot of other things that were out of his control that are positive. A lot of times you take over jobs and the things that are out of your control are negative, which means you can't change them. But when you have the history of the academic support that Nebraska has, the strength training, the nutrition, remember, Nebraska used to be on the cutting edge. Now they're just trying to compete in a more competitive environment.
Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network with us, Hail Varsity Radio. We're talking Big Ten recruiting, as National Signing Day was on Wednesday, and Coach had his special with the network during that Wednesday, part two of Signing Day, the early session, the late session. And Coach, how did you divide up your time? We'll get to the rest of the West and Ohio State and Michigan and everybody else in a moment, but how did you prioritize, and when did you know, all right, man, I'm not going to get this kid, it's time to move on to my second choice?
Right. That's very tricky. You hit it right on the head, Chris. It's prioritizing your time so you can go to number two. The problem is when you prioritize your time and you have to drop to three or four. And the cold hard facts, the brutality sometimes of recruiting, the honesty, is keeping two alive while you're hoping that one comes. It's no fun to cut number two loose, because the longer you recruit number two, the stronger the relationship, and number two's trying to balance you with somebody else. You want number one. If you get number one, you've got to make that difficult phone call or go see that prospect and say, Chris, we don't have a scholarship for you. Or you lose number one, you go to number two, and number two said, you know what, Coach, I'm going to the other school because I was their number one. And then you got to leave that building, that home, and go save them and try to convince number three. So it's a little tricky. How you divide your time, you just, I mean, you don't divide your time in recruiting. You don't stop recruiting. I mean, if you're not coaching, if you're not eating, if you're not with your family, you're recruiting. That's the only way to divide your time up. I mean, if you're not doing it, it better be because you're with your family or you're coaching.
Did you love it? I mean, did you love recruiting?
Chris, here's what I love. Yes, I did. The short answer is yes, and I know I'm bad on short answers. But here's what I loved about recruiting. So it has maybe little to do with football. I got to see this country through the view in living rooms and kitchens. I got to see the richest, the poorest, the whitest, the blackest, the most rural, the most urban, from coast to coast. And it has changed my life politically. It has changed my personal life to see this country in all these different homes of the great country that we live in. And I love that part of it. When you walk into that home, you don't know what you're gonna see. You don't know what the questions are gonna be. You don't know what the feel's gonna be. You just know that there's all kinds of people that make up this country, and I'm glad that I got to meet all kinds of people.
That's awesome to hear, Coach. I mean, that's really cool to put into words your experience and the impact on you. Jerry DiNardo, a couple more minutes with us. Hail Varsity Radio at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Okay, you have Nebraska finishing where they finished. Purdue, wow, that was big time by Coach Brohm. Touch on big picture Purdue, if you could. And then what's the outlook here in the East? What do you take away from how the East results finished out with signing day?
Okay, Purdue's an extraordinary story. I mean, if there's two stories in recruiting, it's really Nebraska and Purdue. What separates Nebraska and Purdue, you know, Scott took over a program that traditionally has been recruiting in the 20s. That's where they've been ranked for a long, long time, even when they were winning national championships. So Scott has made it tick up a little bit. And as I said, I believe he'll make it tick up more than any of the previous coaches. That aside, Purdue's last 4 years before Jeff Brohm arrived in West Lafayette, their recruiting rankings averaged around 68. Mm. He's in the 20s now. And so the drastic improvement that Purdue has made far exceeds the improvement that Nebraska has made. The difference, and again, I said this on air yesterday, the difference between Purdue and Nebraska is I think Purdue is about where they're going to be. You know, they might tick up a little bit and maybe get to 19 or maybe drop to 27 instead of 23, whereas Nebraska, I think, is in the top 10. But Purdue, you know, if you're in the West, you know, and you're coaching, you know, Nebraska had, you know, I don't know how many years of this East-West thing where nobody could compare to them with resources. Now, the win-loss column didn't reflect that, but now the resources are a little bit closer in the West Division. The history's just not any closer because Nebraska is the program that has the national championships. Quickly in the East, you know, Ohio State, this is the first time in about 8 or 9 years they weren't number one in the conference. Couple reasons. They have a small class, which impacts your ratings. If you watch the tape of their prospects, it still looks like a great class. It's just not higher than Penn State and Michigan because of the smallness of it. And Ryan Day, obviously a new coach, he's got to get his feet on the ground. I said when James Franklin came into the conference, he would challenge Ohio State for the most talented teams in the conference. I maintain that opinion. Michigan is as much trouble as they've had on the field, even though they tied for the East. I think people still look at them underachieving. Their staff room is like musical chairs. I mean, you don't even know who's going to be at the meeting sometimes in the morning. So as unsettling as Michigan has been, I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing a good job in recruiting.
Coach, I want a last thought from you on back East recruiting. And I know you're a guy who grew up in New York City. Nebraska has gotten a talented running back out of New Jersey. Ramir is his first name. And just the state of Jersey, the resource it is, and I know that Barry Alvarez has done well in New Jersey. I know Coach Solich in Nebraska did well in New Jersey. And Penn State obviously has done well in New Jersey. And historically speaking, when Rutgers was playing well, you see a bunch of dudes in the NFL from Rutgers that are Jersey natives. I mean, it's not really a secret, but why don't people talk more about the state of New Jersey and their football? I'm glad the Big Ten's in that region because of how good their high school football's been. Is that a region you focused on much at all, either as a coach or now as an analyst?
No. I mean, we did a little bit at Vanderbilt because it was a private school. We didn't do anything from LSU. We did a little bit in Indiana. But, you know, as it relates to the Big Ten, you know, Joe Paterno always used to say, you know, why do I want to join the Big Ten and give these Midwest schools an entree into my recruiting area? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, and now Joe is taking advantage of Ohio and some of the Midwestern schools as well. It did take mm-hmm. advantage of it. So it's worked both ways. I don't know. I you know, to me, Chris, especially talking to you and, you know, your listeners being Nebraska, to me, when I talk about Scott Frost's niche, I go back to Coach Osborne. I mean, when Nebraska signs somebody from New Jersey, somebody from California, someone from New Orleans, and somebody from North Dakota, that's their niche.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and historically, and getting all the players in the state of Nebraska, plus the walk-on program, I mean, that was Nebraska's niche. Coast to coast, the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border. And now with the new rules, where you could take somebody from New Jersey and you can pay for not only the prospects' transportation, meals, and housing, but the parents and the extended family. Now somebody from New Jersey, Los Angeles, New Orleans comes to campus and the parents see this different place because it is different. They say, wow, my son can come here. It's really cool. Now some will say no, but more are going to say yes now that we can pay for the families to visit.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Nebraska wraps up their recruiting class, adds Demaryius Houston. They have four pretty similar look and feel type receivers that join the roster, all in the 6 foot 180 and the 10-600 range, getting some of those fleet guys. But Gary, I think the bigger headline right now, you got 160 players on the roster. Frost has added 101 players in just 14 months. 111 of that 160, if my math is correct here, are underclassmen. 81 are freshmen. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. Has this exceeded what you knew he would be aggressive with this roster, but has this exceeded what you thought he would do?
Oh, definitely. And I think he's not done because you're going to go through spring football, and I think you'll have a little bit more attrition. And then the free agency wire of college football will open, and Nebraska will be able to pick up a couple. I think some of this was intentional to manage the roster better. I think some of it just, it happened. And he was given the green light to have a roster of at least 150, and now he's got this large of a roster. And he knows the competition and the ability to convince walk-ons who should be going to other schools where they're going to get a full-ride scholarship are coming to Nebraska, and it's going to make his program better. They're going to be awful young. But with all the players that he's added, if you just go through the position groups, it's not like he is adding guys to fill spots. He has added guys that either are already in the program that are climbing up the depth chart of the position group, or are expected to be at the top of the position group. The whole thing with this past recruiting class where they didn't have a good second half of the signing period, where they didn't add as many to that top 15 class that they had in December. And they didn't just fill scholarships. They just didn't fill holes to say, hey, let's get to 30. Let's give blank and blank a scholarship. That's happened in the past, and either those guys with the new regime have been moved out or they're sitting still in the program, but they have no hope of moving up the depth chart. But it is, when you mention those numbers out loud, Mark, you go, whoa, that is amazing. That doesn't happen very often in college football. You have turnover, but nowhere near to the extent that Nebraska will have this year when they take the field in the fall as one of the youngest teams, I believe, in college football.
You know, and Gary, along with that, and you've touched on this a little bit, and, you know, over the years, probably the last 15 years, with the downfall of the walk-on program, the conventional wisdom was, well, it's the rise of South Dakota State, it's the rise of South Dakota, it's Northwest Missouri State nearby. Those guys, people are now just going, taking those scholarship situations. And it's almost like collectively we all wrote it off as though, well, that's just how it is anymore. You're not going to be able to do the walk-ons like you could have before. Frost has totally changed that. A lot of these walk-ons, Gary, had offers from South Dakota State, from these successful programs, the North Dakotas. Is that equally impressive that he has been able to flip that, what we all kind of thought was just a bygone era and not coming back?
Exactly, and that's the Scott Frost effect, because in the past it's been some of these players would say, I deserve a full-ride scholarship. I'm not going to take a preferred walk-on spot. Well, he's been able to show interest, build a relationship, and convince players that would take a full ride to Brookings or Fargo or somewhere else that they will have the opportunity to compete for playing time in Nebraska if they come in and do the right thing. And his vision and his ability to sell and the rest of his staff has been pretty remarkable, because this is a solid walk-on class that you could look through Nebraska's walk-on class and probably pick 5 to 6 guys that before they are done with their career, they will have an opportunity to start a football game at Nebraska. And you know, you're probably going to get, before they go through a 4 and 5 year stretch at Nebraska, a walk-on class that will have a Spencer Long type in it, where you'll find a gem that turns into be a couple-year starter for you and maybe has the chance to continue his career at the next level.
Gary Sharp with us on Hill Varsity Radio. And Gary, you said that this may be one of the youngest teams in America, if not the youngest team in America as far as college football goes. But is that any sense of a cause for concern, or is it more of you may be seeing some of these guys getting playing time right away? And if so, is there a name? I know we've got the big names, Wandale Robinson, Ty Robinson, some of these names that may be immediate factors just based on their star power. But all right, is there a name that jumps out that you're like, hey, this guy may be a difference maker year one?
Wandale Robinson is definitely one of those guys. He's the real deal. I mean, it's okay to buy into the hype. He's been impressive since he walked in the door in Lincoln, how he's handled being in a football program, being a student athlete. I think Noah Pola Gates is another one. My number one player in this class in my Super 6 was Jackson Hanna. He comes in and he walks into a position of needed inside linebacker, but I also think he's a really good football player. And I know there was a lot of consternation over Nebraska didn't get an outside linebacker. You know, they wanted another wide receiver, another outside linebacker. They would love to have a center. That may be a walk-on. Josh Wegener from Iowa Western, when he shows up this summer. But keep an eye on Miles Farmer. Miles Farmer may turn into a guy that in 2 or 3 years becomes Nebraska's best outside linebacker recruit. The 6'3", 185 safety that is a ferocious hitter, can play in space, can take on a tight end, can also get to the passer, that you might start to see, if the JoJo Doman hybrid works, those kind of guys rolling down and playing at the second level. I'm curious to watch that. But those are a couple of guys that stand out. The thing about this being a young football team is, guys, wrap your arms around this. He's a star, and he's got 3 more years, you hope, as a starting quarterback. But it would not surprise me if Adrian Martinez is named a captain as a sophomore, which I don't think has ever happened at Nebraska.
Hmm.
And I think he has embraced that
that thing. I'm the quarterback. I don't care how old I am. And I'm going to lead. And if I'm the captain, doesn't matter. I'm the quarterback. I can run the team. Doesn't matter if I'm only a sophomore. I think that will happen. Martinez will be one of the offensive captains this year.
You know, that speaks to something that Frost touches on often. Talks about culture, talks about character. It, you know, it can seem cliche if you're cynical. but it really does seem like it. Gary, you interview a lot of these players pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
It really does seem like the sort of quality of personality type that walks in the door and that they get after all kind of share that same... they all have that same level of maturity. Is maybe that the best way to put it?
And I think that comes from a lot. And that's a great observation, Mark. I think that comes from they spend time with these guys when they're recruiting them. Now, let's go back to the conversation about completely reflipping the roster. Is if you are trying to implement your culture, look at how many young players have started with your culture. You don't have as many older guys that are balancing the past culture and embracing this new culture. You're going to have a lot of guys that get the new culture. So they will have never known anything else. They will have only known the strength and conditioning program like it is, the culture of what is expected here, who the coaches are, how you play, so on and so forth. But I think they do a great job in recruiting and building relationships, understanding the player, and then saying, that player loves the ball. We would be a perfect fit. Let's bring him in. Because I think you hear more and more of the players that are talking to the media, and listen closely as we get to spring and through spring, they kind of sound like either their head coach, the way they talk about football or they talk about the program, or they sound like their position coach. And that's pretty impressive that that has happened in a short amount of time. But I think it's a football program that is getting football players that love the game of football. They love to talk football. Football means a lot to them. And that's exactly what you want, because that is the times over the stretch of about 10 to 15 years. You've gone through years and gone through cycles of classes where that's been missing. I think they're hitting home runs when it comes to that aspect of getting guys into the program that love the game of football.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time here on a Monday, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. I'm Colton Stone. Schmidt should be back tomorrow. Fingers crossed, that's the plan. Big thanks to Brandon Vogel for joining me in the first hour. Danny Burke getting the band back together in the first hour, as well as some insight on betting. And it's always good to talk to Charlie McBride, Blackshirt Charlie, on Mondays, as he's enjoying much better weather than we are currently getting. Big shout out, I don't know if he's listening at this point, but big shout out to my dad, turns 52 today. So happy birthday to my old man. And some big news before we wrap this thing up and put a bow on it, our second best of February. Big thanks for rewinds of Gary Sharp, Jerry DiNardo, even threw a little bit of Kranak in there as we had quite a bit of fun on Saturday while Schmidt was still recovering. So, but some big news throughout the sports world. The Browns have signed Kareem Hunt after his situation where he was not eligible to play. The Chiefs released him. Now he's still going through the correct NFL discipline. They're figuring out what the situation scenario needs to be for him. Is there any protocol he has to pass through? So on and so forth. All the legal action that needs to go through before the NFL turns a blind eye, which we've seen happen before in cases like this. It's pretty selective in who gets a second chance, and, you know, not to name names, but it's more in favor of Kareem Hunt in this situation, mostly because he's younger, he's more in the prime of his career, he's coming off a great season, and a lot of other times you've seen situations where players get into this this gray area where, well, are they still capable of performing at that high of a level? You know, is it worth taking them on as a backup? You know, we've seen a couple situations where you look at Ray Rice, he wasn't averaging anything great when he went out of the league, and that's probably the reason why he didn't get re-signed. It wasn't anything to do with not giving someone a second chance, but it was more along the lines of, do we want to pay the guy the money to do it? So, you know, everyone deserves a second chance, but you make that of what you want. Are the Browns in the situation where they just want to make the playoffs for the first time in, what, it would be 18 years, I believe, 18 seasons, 17 seasons, something like that. So they're in a desperation situation where, not that they can't do no wrong, but, you know, they may do a little wrong before they get right. So, and adding another weapon like that to the back of that backfield for Cleveland could prove to be huge. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that unfolds. Like we said, big news in Nebraska, see how everything that unfolds. And Frost will be in charge of bringing in his first new hire since he became a head coach. So it'll be interesting to see who he brings in and maybe who's on that short list of his. Thanks for tuning in. It's been Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks.